Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the December 16 edition of Commodity Week. From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is Commodity Week. A bit later in the program, we'll talk with University of Illinois Extension ag economist Daryl Good. Our panelists in studio today include Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, Matt Bennett from TGM, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily programming and this program, Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agriculture.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the December 16 edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists include Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, Matt Bennett from TGM, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Let's start our discussion with this question. When you look back over the week, Jackie Vakes, what were the important events that took place?
Oh, boy, there are just so many. We came in on Monday, with somewhat of an agreement at the European level. But you might have thought that we'd see some support come out of that. It was disappointing. We started the day off well and fell backwards. As we move further on, it continued to be a struggle between fund reallocation. All the position changing that's going on at this time of year is really, really tough on the markets at times. Then we had a huge error in the crude oil market, where some fat finger put in 11,000 contracts in the space of a time that we normally trade 500, and that raised havoc and drove it much, much higher. And the next day, of course, we plummeted back to earth. And so we also had rumors of a European bank closing. That certainly didn't help us. And gold itself was just amazing this week. I mean, it was down about $120 in the January contract. And so it appeared to be just nothing more than profit-taking or year-end changing. But, boy, we had so much going on, it wasn't funny.
Matt Bennett, you covered just about everything. What were the very important parts of that you heard from her?
Well, I mean, I agree with about everything she said. And just to basically add something, we're reading a lot about Argentinian weather right now and, of course, weather in Brazil. Well, it seems like they're adequate on moisture in Brazil. If nothing else, maybe they have a little bit too much in a couple of different areas. But in Argentina, very important weather event coming up here this next week. And if that would happen to be a lackluster event, given the heat that's coming on with them, and then really dry areas, you could be looking at a pretty volatile market here on Monday morning.
And Mike Zuzolo?
I think that Jackie's comment about the gold was exceptionally interesting this week, Todd, because when the gold goes up and the dollar goes up with it, that to me says we've still got that deflationary mindset in the marketplace, that the trade is worried about global demand. And it was interesting because the CME Group, their chief economist, put out an update on China about a week ago. And he put in the very first sentence, look, the rate of GDP for China is not going to be 10% anymore like we've seen the last decade. It's going to be more like 5 to 8% for the rest of this decade. When you add that to their inflation rate, even if their inflation rate drops 1 or 2%, you're still only talking about a real GDP of probably only 5-6% in China, if he's right. And I think that's what the trade had to grapple with. So I think this news-driven, deflation-driven pre-holiday trade, you know, continued to keep the market on the sidelines, the potential longs on the sidelines.
Tell me more, Jackie, about this little fat-fingered event that happened in the crude oil. It took the corn market down and the commodities in general pretty sharply.
It really did. You know, when you looked at the well, you know, there's a relationship, of course, between those, and there's also, you know, some people who really didn't even know that that's what happened, I believe. You know, so one day you see January contract go to 101 and a quarter, and the next day you're down at 95. That's pretty terrifying. So you start to see people take money out all over. And you know, the one thing that we have to recognize in these markets is that there's interconnection of money flow that goes between all the different commodities. You know, you might be long gold and short over here. You might be long here and short over there. And so sometimes you have to take money from one place to meet the demands of another place.
Well, it was kind of interesting, too, Todd, because at the same time that the crude oil was rallying so sharply, we were hearing about Iran and them coming into the Straits of Hormuz and maybe trying to come in and block the Straits of Hormuz. And so it made fundamental sense at the time why the crude was rallying. So that probably brought on even more buying, and I think probably the high-frequency traders saw some technicals tripped, and they added to as well. So that just added to the downside momentum the next day when it was all for naught.
Now, speaking of Iran's motions over the week, does Iran-Israel scare you at all as it pertains to the commodity markets in the coming year?
Very much so. If we take the crude oil back up above $120 a barrel for any time period at all at West Texas in the New York markets, that is the kiss of death typically for the S&P 500 in the financial markets. It essentially shuts our growth down, and we are seeing the U.S. economy come back around.
Well, you bet. And, you know, when you looked at the CPI today, the Consumer Price Index was actually flat in November. Most of that was related to lower gas prices. You know, it's certainly not going to be the case if we see a big rise in that, in the crude oil and the energy market.
March corn this week, a high of $6 a penny and a half, a low at $5.76 and a quarter. A settlement price at $5.83 and a quarter, down 11 and a quarter. Remember, we give you the day, the overnight trade, open outcry and electronic. December corn, $5.48, down 3 3/4, Friday to Friday. Matt, was the elevator busy taking in corn this week, and were they new sales or just bringing sales forward from January? What kinds of things were happening?
A lot of things are going on right now. We're shipping quite a bit of corn out. You know, the basis levels have stayed relatively strong. A couple rail lines have backed off a little bit in the last few weeks, but for the most part, we've seen basis hang right in there. As far as what's coming into the elevator, we've got a lot of, free DP going on. Most places in the countryside in my area are taking free DP. We've even heard about some elevators taking Jan contracts, which if they're taking free DP, they're taking Jan contracts. So, you know, there's very few elevators that are just flat out full in the countryside. And I think that, you know, this is a little bit of a different year. And, you know, whenever we get into the discussion, probably hearing a little bit about disappearance, I think it might be more of an issue than maybe what some people think.
Tell me about your basis at this point. Are you still paying overs?
No, we're not paying over. We're awfully close, though. We're within a couple pennies, just depending on whether it's the cash or Jan. You know, we're right in there close, and a lot closer than what we are this time of year traditionally.
So we're at 570, 580 cash corn.
Right in that area, yes.
Okay, so when we're at 570, $5.80 cash corn in the month of December, late December going into January, and you look at that price, is it cheap corn? Or is it high-priced corn? And the perspective is entirely different, and we'll start over with you, Mike.
I think right now for me, Todd, it's more on the cheap price when it comes to futures. I think that what I see happening, and when I was in Ohio this week, they were just wrapping up harvest over there, and then I was in Kentucky on Wednesday, and when I talked to both producers of both states, there's a lot of corn to be sold, and I think what I see maybe happening is if we have a futures rally or a futures turnaround, the funds come back in after the first of the year, that really hits the basis hard, in my opinion, because I think there is a lot of cash flow selling. So I think it's a cheap price, relatively speaking, but I think in the short term, there's a lot of pent-up selling that wants to be done for cash flow needs as we get into January. So if we have a futures rally, I'm nervous about the basis starting to weaken pretty dramatically.
I think it's a, you know, I think it's a cheap price, if especially if you're a buyer from in the world someplace other than the United States. If you're an end user and you haven't done anything, it's not a very cheap price. In some places like the East Coast, it's $1.20 over is what they're paying the farmer. You know that's not what the end user is going to get it for. And so I think it just depends upon where you're located. We saw Japan come back in today. That was great. You know, they bought 205,000 metric tons of corn. They've been really very, very slow in their buying this year, and they've been replacing a lot of corn we know with wheat. And so in general, what Mike said is right on in terms of if we see the futures rally, I think then we'll see basis back off.
Yeah, and to add to that, and basically just ties right in, makes perfect sense, is that since we've backed the futures off so much, that's part of the reason why basis maybe didn't weaken up near as much as what it could have. And so I agree with what both of these guys are saying. And, you know, I think it'll be real interesting to see what basis levels do depending on what ethanol manufacturers do after the first of the year as well, you know, because we've seen a little bit of a change in their mindset as far as their purchases go after the first of the year, just based upon several unknown factors.
Jackie, can you take us through some of the numbers that have been released for the upcoming January reports? And Informa was out with some numbers this week as well.
Well, they certainly were, and that was one of the things that I missed when I talked about this week. They came out during the market day today. They actually raised their corn acres to 94.389 from 94. You know, not a big surprise, I don't think, when it was really good for us to have the FSA numbers this last year. We knew that there was 96 million acres intended to be planted if the floods wouldn't have come. So I don't think this number really surprises too many people. They lowered their bean acres, though, by 1.5 million. They went down to 74.61 from 76.1. And so, you know, that's definitely tighter and, of course, supports a better bean rally, and especially if we're dry. And on wheat, 57.1. As far as the January numbers go, I don't think I have a clue at this point in time yet. We really, you know, this is a part of it, of course, you know. But when it comes to the USDA numbers and the carryout numbers, it's going to take a little bit more yet.
Mike, have you seen numbers for USDA reports and started thinking about what the ending numbers will be when we hit January 12th?
I think the expectations are going down by analysts that the USDA is going to rectify or justify their numbers any more than they already have, Todd. I think that the trade was thinking that they would have to come out. Why, I don't know, but I think the general mindset that I've picked up in Chicago with other analysts that I speak with is that they were going to come out and justify things at the end of the year, maybe in January. Now I think they're less concerned that that's not going to happen. Maybe part of it goes back to the Informa numbers and these big new crop acres. Maybe it means less whether USDA changes the numbers, because if I plug Informa's numbers in and I use a 152.5 yield and I use a 13 billion bushel demand, we're still looking at 1.158 billion bushel carryover for next year. So maybe it means less what USDA says for 11-12.
Well, and I think when you look at the USDA numbers, we have to take into account, I think USDA has the report pared down almost as much as they possibly can when it comes to the export numbers, when it comes to feed usage. We just had cattle on feed come out this afternoon. We came in at 104% on feed over last year. We came in at 104% placements. Placements were expected to be under 100%. Marketings were 100. So, you know, that certainly, those numbers certainly don't justify the size of the feed usage number that they have. And so, you know, plugging in the numbers that Mike's using, absolutely using today's demand numbers, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's where we're going to be.
Slow demand numbers.
Right. Yeah, there's no question about it. And when you look forward, you know, I guess maybe to add just a little bit and go on the other side here, you know, if you, instead of 152, what if you come in there with a 165 is what I keep talking to my farmers about, because, you know, this time of year, you haven't brought it up yet, Todd, but we certainly, the last few months have been looking awfully hard at locking in some profit levels. And I think you've got to think pretty heavily about if we have a really good spring, and Jackie and I were talking before the show, if the insurance price ends up close to what it was last year, you know, you're probably looking at pretty good plannings. And what if with these technology type hybrids that we have, what if we have excellent weather? What kind of a national yield are we going to post up?
We could put 1.6 billion in the carryover for 2013 easily enough.
You could put more than that.
You could put more than that in there. There's no question about it.
And what, that would put us at 15 or 17% at a stocks-to-use ratio, mm-hmm. and instead of we're at 6.7 at this point. So those numbers could change. Again, I will ask this question again. Is this a cheap or a high price for corn? And then you can bring in new crop if you'd like.
Okay. I think it just depends upon your vantage point. If you're a producer, a corn producer, is that a profitable level for you? And I think most of the guys that I deal with, given their yields, that was still a pretty decent price. It's still profitable. Now, is it high relative to what they got earlier in the year, what went across the scale, or what their neighbors say in their average price is? You know, no. But it's still a decent price. And I think as far as the world goes, like Jackie alluded to, you know, there's a lot of cheaper protein out there on the market, and that's kind of what's been killing our export market. You know, when you get into the new crop, what I think about new crop prices, you know, earlier on, whenever we were above $6, we were very aggressive in getting some prices locked in, especially for our guys that were booking their fertilizer. Now, down in here in these areas, we're kind of on a wait-and-see approach, and if guys want to do something, we try to cover it with some sort of a limited risk strategy, like a bull call strategy, to participate in the upside.
Right. And you know, you keep asking, you know, is this a cheap price or not a cheap price?
I do.
You know, the reality is, and this is, I think this is a problem that we have with out in the countryside, is if we say that they need to get put protection if they're a producer, or they need to get call protection if they're an end user, they immediately think we're either bearish or we're really bullish. You know, the truth of the matter is all three of us do risk management. And so is this a cheap price? I can't really say it's a cheap price for sure. All I can tell you is that you need to be aware of the fact that it could go lower. We have so many outside market influences like the Eurozone, the U.S. economy, all those types of things. You can't take a chance, especially if you have input prices locked in, to not get some type of a limited risk or a fixed risk position on.
Yeah, I think to couple that, Todd, 2011 to me has been just the first half of the year was weaker dollar, inflation, tight supplies. You couldn't get the price high enough in the market's mindset. It's like Goldilocks. The porridge was running too hot. And now you've gotten to the point where you're now too cold. You've got the strong dollar, you've got deflation, and you've got weak demand. And that's all everybody can talk about. I simply think we've gone from one extreme to another. Mm-hmm. And after the price break that we have hit and gone down to, we found demand and that the price is needing to go back up to assure the new crop supplies come on, that farmers around the world in the Northern Hemisphere especially come on the books and come on with their acres that everybody's talking about. Global wheat exports are up 5% versus 2010. Global corn exports are up almost 5% versus 2010. Global bean exports are up 5% versus 2010. There's not a demand problem. I think what we've had here in the last 6 months is the EU crisis come in, coupled with some non-traditional suppliers like the former Soviet Union and the Ukraine, and that's turned everybody into a deflationary bear. And that's what we're, like Jackie's saying, we're trying to weave through that with risk management. I think there's a time and a place to sell, but I think the rest of them are saying the same thing. Look for a relief rally to do that. Don't do it right here.
If Mike's right, there should be an acreage battle of some sort, but I don't ever hear anybody talking about that.
Oh, yeah.
It sure hasn't been talked about this year as much as it's been talked about in some of the years past. There's no question about it, but I do think there will be some sort of an acreage battle that we'll see. And I think, you know, I agree with everything Mike's saying. I mean, you know, I think with China kind of taking the stance that they have on exports, it's maybe raised some eyebrows as far as their imports of our corn. And, you know, they're kind of backing away from it. And, you know, they went ahead and bought some corn this past year, which did help our market out just a little bit. And, you know, I think looking forward, nothing is a given. If we look back to the Farm Progress Show, Todd, I took a little bit of heat from some of the other panelists, not because I was bearish, but simply because as a producer, I said we need to be looking at locking in prices. And, maybe that's the only time in my career I've been right, but at least it's been once, you know.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, that's interesting that you say that about China, because if you look at the breakdown, China's been buying corn every single week.
Yeah,
China actually, as of this last week, Japan was at 5.7 million metric tons, and China was over 2.4 million metric tons, and only Mexico was ahead of them, and nobody's talking about that. You just don't see it in the news. You don't see anything else. China's been taking beans again. But, you know, for the moment, I think, you know, I think
Wait,
it's
they've
just
been buying from the U.S., or are they just been buying
from
corn?
The U.S., buying from the U.S. it's there, you know, and you got to look at the breakdowns. You really got to look to find it. I think that's why a lot of people don't talk about it, because you have to actually look at the breakdowns of the countries that buy it. And so, you know, they've been showing up all the time, not big amounts, just always steady amounts, you know, and very quietly. And that's kind of their way of doing it. But, you know, it's just interesting to see what makes the news and what doesn't make the news.
Okay, before we leave corn, let's talk about sales. Should producers, and Mike, we'll start with you, be thinking about old crop, new extra sales, and new crop sales as well?
I want to say I want to wait till the end of the year, the first of next year, and see if the global end user and the global investors both come back into the futures market at the same time. And if we can get a 40 to 50 cent rally in front end corn, that gives us a 30 to 40 cent rally in new crop corn. And that's where I'd be looking at targets to get both, some of both sold. I would want a relief rally, but I would call it a relief rally and say that's a good place to go. And one of the other two panelists talked about the crop insurance and what the February price is. That's really paramount in terms of how aggressive you can become early this year. It's a lot different than last year compared to what the upside potential is, because we have lost some of the fund investment. There's no question about that. We have lost some of the leverage that was going on. It's not 2011 in terms of tight wheat stocks like we had. So I don't think we can look for the 2011 tight price levels unless we have serious weather problems in the second half of the marketing year. So I really want to use a relief rally to get some hedges in place, but I will not sell at this point unless the EU crisis gets worse.
Old crop and new crop corn.
Well, I'm sitting back and I'm going to say, you know, I'm in Mike's camp. I'm not looking to make sales, but I will if we get a good rally before the end of the year. You know, and I'll make, and when I say sales, I'm talking about using options more than cash.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both these guys, but I'll say this. You have to quantify it by where is the producer at. You know, what are their intentions for this upcoming year? Did they go ahead and buy their fertilizer this fall without making new crop sales? I certainly hope not. I did not advise anybody to do something like that. But, you know, that definitely plays into it. And if they did, then I don't know that I would get real aggressive right now in making sales, because I don't know that it's near as profitable as what they would like to see it be. So I would probably approach some things with some limited option or limited risk option strategies just to protect in case something happens, you know, on Monday night that none of us really foresee, and we come in and see the market down the limit.
In Chicago, March wheat finished at 583 and three quarters, down 12 and a quarter. July wheat at 613, 13 and a quarter lower. Mr. Zuzalo, there's a lot of wheat on the world market. Does it worry you?
No, it really doesn't, because we are coming into a time period where the former Soviet Union and the Ukrainians probably are not going to be as aggressive sellers as they have been, Todd. Now, there is feed wheat in Australia. Argentina's been talked about, but when I was in France last week, I talked to a trader that was talking about Argentina specifically, and he said every year Argentina puts 3 to 5 million tons of wheat up for sale and release for exports in the month of December. He said this is not odd for Argentina. So I think we're coming into a time period where we'll have less competition. I also feel like that the weather this week, if anything, was not looked at all from a standpoint of the potential that most of the southern plains may get missed with this big rain and snowstorm that everybody's talking about. So a week from today or a week from Friday, we may be sitting here saying they got missed again and it's turning cold. We need to take Kansas City wheat up sharply. So I think there's better. I've been talking about a low in the next 60 days for wheat. I'd stand by that right now.
January beans in Chicago from the CME Group at $11.32 top, bottom at $10.94 and a quarter. Settlement price at $11.30 on the 16th day of December, up 23 cents. November soybeans at $11.50 and a half, up 15 and a quarter from the previous week. Tell me what your indications are in the bean market for direction.
Well, I think Matt hit on it when we talked a little bit earlier. It's weather. It's so much of it is weather right now, in Argentinian weather. If we come in on Sunday night and when the market opens up, they've increased the rain potential for down there. I think we could be down 20 or 30 cents easily on Monday. If we come in on Sunday night and they have not done that, we'll be up again, and we'll probably be up another 20.
Yeah, I really don't have anything to add to that. I don't think there's any question that on bean market, right now South American weather is pretty much paramount. So I think it's going to be a leading factor in determining which direction we take this market in the next few weeks, barring something coming up that we're not really seeing right now.
Mike, I was on the road all the week long with the Illinois Farm Economic Summit. It's not paying a lot of attention to the marketplace. China had not been into the market for U.S. soybeans very much up until that point. Have they come into the marketplace or not?
Not as much, but we did have a good NOPA crush number, Todd, and I think that was seen by the trade that we, like corn, have good domestic demand, but the weekly export sales were towards the low end of the range. I think Matt and Jackie have hit the nail on the head with South America, because I think this past week might be the damage is being done, and if we don't get rains and it warms up in southern Brazil, then serious damage is going to be done, and maybe the trade will start thinking maybe USDA is going to have to start lowering South American production for beans, and then that turns the Chinese back to a U.S. origin type export market again, and the trade tries to price that in. That's kind of the look that I see. It may not happen for another week, and we've got the holidays, but I think if there's true damage done in the next 10 days, because clients that I have down there are saying it's going to happen, we're going to lose some production here if we don't get rains. If that happens and USDA starts lowering the South American crop, I think the trade's going to have to factor in that maybe China's back to the United States for sourcing.
Matt, I'm going to ask the same question I've asked earlier about corn, but change it just a little bit, and we'll go across the board with everybody. Is January soybeans at $11.30 and November beans at $11.50, either one, cheap?
Again, I think a lot of it depends upon your vantage point. But, I think our export market has been okay so far, as Mike said a little bit ago. Our exports are running fairly good, but I think a lot of it just depends on who you are and what you're doing. It depends on where you're at in the world. And to me, am I bullish or bearish at this point, which is another way to answer that question. I think I'm mildly optimistic on beans, and I think that they will be coming back at some point, especially if we have weather problems in other parts of the world, because I don't think that we have a plethora of beans to where we can withstand poor weather in a different part of the world, such as South America.
Jackie?
Well, and I guess I'd have to say that I'm more than mildly optimistic. I'm fairly bullish on it, primarily because, number one, you know, they're underpriced compared to where corn is. Okay. Number two, the Brazilian currency has been going up steadily against the dollar. And number three, the Baltic freight rates have been dropping. Those are all things that are positives for us when it comes to beans and to be able to even export more beans than we normally do. So if we do continue to have the weather situation, I think that we could see beans go back up there and try and hit the $12 level.
And Mike?
I think that's a key point, is that $12 level, Todd. The thing that I've been talking to clients about, whether you're looking at January or new crop, I think there's a technical need to try and test the October lows. Like for new crop November, that's around the 1170, 1172 level. See if we can get back up above that level. If we cannot get back up above that level, given that Informa has given us such a big reduction in acreage for 2012, the premium's probably coming up in new crop beans. The futures market's probably trying to price in some lower carryover, so take advantage of that. So if we fail at that 1170 level, don't regain that as support, I think that's where I'm going to start to move and getting some 12 hedges in place.
And now a final word from everybody right here in studio. We did tell you we talked to Darrell Good, by the way. I talked to him earlier on Friday, and it will hold till next week. I decided just to let us run today. So Darrell will join us on Commodity Week next week. Matt?
Yeah, I wouldn't get overly excited about this market being lackluster here lately, and just kind of be patient. And if anything, enter into some sort of a limited risk scenario if you want to do something right now, and wait for a little bit better prices.
Jackie?
I think the most important thing is to know what your situation is, and you have to be prepared both ways. I think it's major disappointment if you sell and the market goes higher, and it's major disappointment if you don't sell and the market goes lower. So make sure you have yourself prepared.
And about 20 seconds, Mike.
Short term, look for a bounce on fundamentals and oversold conditions. If we don't get that by the first or second week of January, get ready to hedge if the technicals break lower. Merry Christmas.
Hey, thanks so much. Merry Christmas to all. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week for the 16th day of December.